Welcome to another edition of Fourth and One. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs, and we are doing a bonus edition ahead of the 2019 NFL Draft here. The draft is tomorrow. It begins in Nashville. Everything that we had planned to talk about has changed about 180 degrees in the last 24 hours because, of course, news broke Tuesday that the Chiefs had agreed to trade the 2019 first-round pick, number 29 overall, and the lower of the two second-round picks the Chiefs have next year, which I expect will be their natural selection near the end of the second round.
It'll be 32nd in the second round.
33rd, probably, unless the Patriots lose a pick again. Which is always a possibility. No? Okay. Mm-mm. Nick's in a mood.
No, I'm fine right now. Good.
And then they also swapped third-round picks. So the Chiefs move up 8 spots in the second round from 92 to 84 in this year's draft as part of it. Essentially, the way it works out is it almost ends up being a three-team trade with San Francisco, where the Chiefs swap second-round picks with San Francisco and then trade Dee Ford in exchange for Frank Clark and a first-round pick. Basically, from the Chiefs' perspective, that's how it works out. Nick Jacobs, are you happy with this trade? Do you think the Chiefs gave up too much, or do you think that this was a good move?
From a trade perspective, I was actually surprised that they were able to work it the way that they did. I didn't think they would get as favorable terms in terms of the being able to keep the higher second round. I figured Seattle would want that. And then I was surprised that Seattle was willing to let them trade up a handful of spots in the third round. So in those regards, I was actually really impressed with what the Chiefs were able to get in that regard. So I'm not upset about it, as I know a lot of people in my mentions were and what I saw in the Twitter sphere. Frank Clark's a well-rounded football player. In my opinion, he's one of the top five defensive ends in the league, complete defensive end.
Reports say the Chiefs think he's the second best defensive end in the league right now. So,
well, they should feel that way if they're going to give him that kind of money and trade for him. So, I mean, that's good that they feel that way, and we'll see if they were 100% correct in their evaluation. What I see in coaches' film shows me that he is definitely in that ballpark. It's all just a matter of him staying healthy. And some people asked me last night if I think he's going to stay hungry and play at that level. After I saw the Josina Anderson piece from a couple years ago, the 15-minute feature on him, what that guy went through growing up and what he experienced in the childhood that he had to go that he went through, I can't even begin to imagine. So I understand why he plays the way he does on the football field because of what he had to get through to get to that point.
I want to address the compensation first. I would have been more comfortable if the Chiefs had just traded 29 straight up for Frank Clark. The market for a defensive end had kind of been set with a second-round pick next year for Dee Ford. But let's make it clear, Frank Clark is a much, much, much better football player than Dee Ford. So you were always going to have to give up more to get him. Dee Ford is basically a one-trick guy. He's a speed rusher off the edge. Frank Clark brings power. He can play against the run. And he's just a more versatile and well-rounded guy, as you said. Is it fair, or do you think that the Chiefs, because they're in win-now mode, overpaid just a little bit?
I don't think they overpaid, and the reason I don't think they overpaid is because with Dee Ford, here's the thing, and people want to use a Dee Ford comparison, that's completely fine. But Dee Ford, as you said, is a one-dimensional player. He doesn't have a great overall pass rushing skill set. He doesn't have some understanding in regards of gap control. He struggles to be able to understand how to get small, to be able to maneuver how he needs to as a defensive lineman to force an offensive lineman to hold, but still have the desire to get through it. And here's the reality. Frank Clark has had 4 consistent years. Dee Ford showed up for contract year. And I'm going to be blunt
like 3 games a couple years ago, too.
And what I'm going to be blunt about in a way that I haven't been because he's gone now. The running joke I always made about Dee Ford is I always appreciated how he flashed the 5-5 because that's how many times he showed up in a game was 5 times. I mean, that's the reality of it. And I know people are going to disagree with that. But here's the thing. Dee Ford didn't Again, Dee Ford wasn't going to be the difference maker when the game was on the line. Neither was Justin Houston. That's the reality of it.
Sometimes he was, but it was usually because he lined up off sides or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, he did make a difference in that one.
In that one, yes, there was certainly a difference.
Man, Frank Clark had better not line up off sides against the Jaguars. I'm just saying.
But getting back to this, with Frank Clark, I mean, what you're getting as a guy that when it's fourth and one and the game's on the line, that guy is going to dig down deep and find a way to make a play. That guy is going to be one of the ones you turn to be the difference maker to get you to a Super Bowl. I never felt that with a lot of the defenders on the Chiefs team over the years. I heard them all talk about Super Bowl. They all said they wanted to go to a Super Bowl, but I never saw them have the desire or the plays that were going to make it happen when it mattered and when they were in those moments.
By the way, did you see Le'Veon Bell? Voluntary workouts not there with this new team.
Surprise.
Ouch. The other aspect I think that has vexed fans about this trade, though, is the five-year, $105 million contract that they signed. Because they're like, oh, man, if we didn't have the money to sign Dee Ford or Justin Houston or any of those guys, why are we now handing out this big contract? The first thing I would point out is I don't care if it was a 10-year, $700 million contract. What you need to look at is the guaranteed money, and we're talking $63 million. So effectively, it's basically a three-year guaranteed deal, and you can wiggle around from there, and it makes him the highest paid it doesn't even make him the highest paid edge rusher in the league. I mean, that honor still belongs to Khalil Mack. So I don't have a problem with the long term contract they gave, especially if you think he's the second best pass rusher in the league. I think that the contract is actually fairly favorable to the Chiefs from that standpoint, if that's how you value that player.
With Clark, I mean, it's fair market value. And I know there's some people out there that feel, well, we could have given that money to Dee Ford and it could have been cheaper. Here's the reality. Dee Ford, as we already said, has one simple skill set as an edge rusher. He can't stop the run. And here's the bigger problem that people are going to figure out here soon enough. And people keep using the word fleeced about the Chiefs. Here's what I'm going to tell you. The Chiefs, for them to be able to get the second round pick that they got for Dee Ford with the back issue that he has, and that thing's only going to get worse here down the road, that's why you never paid that guy, because of the back issue, and that's going to sneak back up here over the years, and then people are going to be like, oh, okay, here in a couple years down the road, I wouldn't be surprised one bit if he's out of the league in 2 to 3 years with that back issue, or he's missing 8 games at a time minimal because he already got his guaranteed money, which is really what he needed to do to set him and his family up long term. And I think that down the road here, people are going to be like, you know, maybe the Chiefs did get the better end of that deal, like some people did with Marcus Peters this past year.
Yeah. Also, there's always an aspect when it comes to a trade like this, though, that, you know, it comes up, hey, why was the other team willing to get rid of him? Like, why wasn't the other team willing to pay him? And we've talked a lot about Dee Ford. I don't think anybody, at least no, nobody that I know of whose opinion I greatly respect on the Chiefs was advocating for a long-term deal for Dee Ford. Most of the talk all season was franchise him. If you get stuck with him and you have to pay him, you know, then make him back up what he did last year. But nobody was willing to give him a long-term deal. Seattle, obviously, willing to part ways with Frank Clark here. Is that a cause for a red flag for you? Or when you look at the makeup of the roster and what they just had to give out to Russell Wilson, do you see some other factors at play there? Maybe a la the Raiders being willing to deal a guy like Khalil Mack, even though it clearly was an issue with his ability or his performance or anything like that.
This is just from afar, without knowing the inner workings of the Seahawks. What I personally think is I think they have been trying to phase out that team and that culture that they had during their Super Bowl runs. I think they've been trying to
Legion of Boom.
I think they've been trying to phase out that mentality as slowly as they could to remain competitive, but slowly, inch by inch, get rid of that mentality, because Frank Clark came after their back-to-back Super Bowl years. And so he was still a part of the mentality there with the roster, and I mean, and you know, with Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, and then, you know, you had Cliff Averill and those type of guys. They had a certain style and certain way that they played, and Frank Clark got to learn from them and got mentored by those guys in that regard. And he holds himself accountable. As I watched a lot of his mic'd up segments, he's going to be a vocal leader on this team, just like Tyrann Mathieu is. And they're going to have more of an edge to him that I think the 2015 Broncos had. The Chiefs do. I think the Chiefs will now. And I think that's what this team needs, because I think this defense needed a culture change in Kansas City to bring a little bit more swagger to him.
Here's the other thing I'll say. I think that if a year from now we're talking about Frank Clark having been the difference maker on getting this team to its first Super Bowl in 50 years and or winning its first Super Bowl in 50 years, they could have given up another first-round pick and people would be thrilled with that.
Yeah, and it's like we talk about time and time again, and I did on Twitter last night, is I think what people are upset about is they had in their mind what they thought was acceptable without having all the puzzle pieces of everything and the roadmap that they thought a team should take to get to that point. But the thing is, we're not in the combine, you know, we're not in the meetings in the combine room. We're not in the scouts meetings to hear what they think about certain players and the guys that may come up and what they view their locker room as or what they need in their locker room. So I think for all of us, I think people are more upset that they didn't take the road that they envisioned versus what the team, with all the puzzle pieces that they have, thinks that they need to go down.
Essentially, they're taking the money they were set to pay Justin Houston, and they're going to give it to Frank Clark. So I know that everybody's looking at the D Ford and Frank Clark because those are the two guys that were traded this offseason. But realistically, in some ways it's Justin Houston's money too that's in that position, and Houston may have been a better fit as a 4-3 guy. Safe to say that, especially with Justin Houston's knees and his age, that you would much rather have a Frank Clark on your roster and be giving him the $21 million a year at this stage of their career, right?
Yeah, I mean, Houston, like I've talked about time and time again with his knee, he lost a lot of his lateral quickness and lateral movement, so he'd become more of a bull rusher at this point in his career, and he wasn't stopping the run as well as he was before. And so it just, the return on investment wasn't there anymore, and you were going to have to move on from that. And he wasn't going to fit as well with the loops, the twists, the games, the stunts. He just wasn't going to be capable of doing all that with his knee at this age. And Dee Ford wasn't going to be capable of being able to stop the run. So each of them had flaws in their game. Frank Clark is an upgrade over both of them in a way that people may not see right now, but down the road here, as long as he doesn't get injured, they will fully understand. And it's just going to take people physically watching it to be able to be like, oh, okay.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we come back. There's one more aspect of this deal that I'd like to get to as we look forward a little bit to what the Chiefs do now in the draft. Stick with us here on 4th and 1.
We know Kansas City.
We love telling the stories of Kansas City.
An officer recognized something while they were out on a call.
And we couldn't do it without our reporters on the streets.
This has been such a hot button issue.
Disaster averted in this case.
We hustle. We dig.
We bring you the important stories you won't see anywhere else.
You were part of the team that helped land a rover on Mars.
There is a difference in the morning. Watch us, and you'll see.
41 Action News, clear, complete coverage.
Save KC. Stories of hope.
Individually, none of us have got the resources to combat this, but together we do.
Stories of change.
Statistics do show that we can build strong community and strong neighborhoods to reduce violence.
Stories you won't see anywhere else, like this one.
There's so much hurt, and these people don't think about that.
Showcasing the people, working together as one to better our community.
There's strength in numbers.
And change lives.
We want them to know they're not alone.
Save KC, only on 41 Action News and KSHB.com.
41 Action Sports with Mick Schaefer. Clear, complete coverage.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined again by Nick Jacobs. And I kind of teased to this as we headed out on the break. The one other aspect of this trade that I think is important to remember, the Chiefs were sitting there at number 29. I do not think that an elite edge rusher was going to fall to them. And so I think the Chiefs were going to have to trade up at some point. They were going to have to give up assets, whether it was a second round pick this year or next, to move up and try to get in on the action. And at this point, look, you were realistically probably looking to move into the 15 to 21 range to get a Cleveland Farrell out of Clemson. That's probably the most likely scenario the Chiefs were looking at, unless a guy like a Rashawn Gary started sliding precipitously or something like that. But realistically, you're probably targeting Cleveland Farrell, and you're probably having to trade up and get draft assets to do that because he wasn't going to be there at 29. So essentially what you did was, instead of waiting to see how that played out, you went and got a better player with a more proven track record who isn't going to need time to adjust to the league for maybe a year or two to become an elite pass rusher. No matter who they would have gotten, even if they had moved up to get Cleveland Farrell, I do not think he would have the impact this year that Frank Clark would have. And if you're in win-now mode and you have a chance to get better, I think that that's a part of this that has to factor in. I think the Chiefs last offseason slow-played it a little bit because I don't think anybody realized how good Patrick Mahomes was going to be. And I think that they might have done a few things differently last offseason if they had known that Patrick Mahomes was going to set the world on fire the way that he did. I don't think the Chiefs are going to make that same mistake again. That's what this trade says to me.
Correct, yeah. There's nothing you said that's inaccurate in that I disagree with. I mean, that...
Mark it down. This is a first.
Enjoy it while you can.
That's right.
Put that on the refrigerator or something.
I'm going to make a new trophy, and I'm going to keep that one now.
Okay, sounds good. But yeah, no, that's how I was viewing the trade, and I know a lot of people aren't viewing it that same way, and it seems like that's what they're upset about. But yeah, you and I talked about on this podcast many times, to get to 17 through the 21 range to get one of those edge rushers, whether Sweat dropped down or Brian Burns was there, and Burns, you're kind of dealing with the same problem you dealt with Dee Ford on.
Probably not going to be great against the run.
Right.
Real and fast, then, kind of a one-trick pony guy.
And then with Farrell, like you said, I think he's going to end up with Seattle 21 now. I think they're going
to
end up.
That's the funny thing. I mocked him to Seattle too.
So then, like you said, in that regard, to move up to that, you were going to have to give up a second round pick. It was just a matter of whether it was this year or next year, and maybe a little more depending on what the competition was to get to that spot for what player. So, like you said, you got a rusher now that's 100% established, already knows what it takes to win in the league, already has been a part of the playoff runs, already been a part of a culture that expects to win and has a certain level that they perform at. He already has everything that you need ready-made at this very moment, and you're good to go. You're not. It's if you want to take it in like a cooking terms, I watch a lot of cooking shows.
All right.
It's already made. The lasagna is already made. It was already in the refrigerator. You just got to heat the thing up, and you're good to go. You don't have to make it from scratch and take the time for it.
Are you a Rachel Ray guy, or who?
Be Bobby Flay is what I watch a lot
of.
And some Gordon Ramsay.
I have to, because of my wife, I sometimes have to watch a show called The Kitchen, and because of my wife and my 11-year-old, I often have to watch Chopped.
I have watched Chopped before. Yes, I've taken a break because there's only so many episodes you can watch before you predict each time.
Yeah. So, but
what's in the mystery basket?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like some purple rutabaga I've never seen before. Yeah. So, I don't think the Chiefs got a purple rutabaga in Frank Clark, but it begs the question. Now the Chiefs don't have a first round pick. So what do you think they're going to do? At 61 and 63, do you think the Chiefs consider packaging those two and moving up into early in the first round if a guy that they value like a Chris Jones slides down, or do you think they're better off sitting there and taking those two picks and then also taking pick 84 and using those three picks to address needs now?
I think it's just a matter of how far somebody slides and where do they slide to, because they do have the ammo to take both those second rounders and to move up if they want to. A team would take that. Now, these two second rounders and this third, to me, are kind of actually the more valuable picks in this draft overall. Whoever has more second, third round picks this year, they're going to clean up in terms of what they can get value.
Which, by the way, it means the Patriots are going to do really well in this draft.
And the Colts are going to
have like six picks in the top 101.
I mean, those two teams are going to do really, really well, and they're going to be competing with the Chiefs. Now, if there's somebody that,
so gross,
that they have graded really high that they feel they need to move up for, I totally get it. But I think the Chiefs can address a lot of needs, and I think personally, when you look at that Patriots game, the things you're looking for, you want to add more. You want to add better depth at receiver. You want to add, in my opinion, you want to add a power running back. You want to add coverage in the secondary. Maybe you add a defensive lineman that can be in the rotation as a one or three tech, because end-wise, you don't need any more. You're gold. And then maybe you want some developmental corners. But you're adding all those to be insurance policies as depth for what you already have on this roster, except for maybe free safety where you may have somebody start with range.
Here's the ironic thing. I think had the Chiefs stayed at 29, I think a couple of the guys they were looking at may have been Sean Bunting, the cornerback out of Central Michigan. I know Juan Thornhill's a name, the safety out of Virginia that had kind of popped up and surfaced as a possible first-round guy. I think that there's a chance Bunting's still there at 61.
Yeah.
Or that Thornhill's still there at 61.
Correct.
Certainly Imani Hooker, or maybe Imani Aruwariye, the Penn State corner, some of those guys are going to be there at 61 and 63.
Right.
I would not be surprised if the Chiefs use both those picks on addressing the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Although part of it again depends on, is there somebody who slides? But I think the trade allows the Chiefs to really go best available. Mm-hmm. And an ideal scenario to me would be if you can get Sean Bunting at 61 and you still get a very good corner at very good value at number 61.
63.
And then at 63, you can use that depending, you know, if you don't like the safeties that are there, or if there's another corner that you really love that's there, there's a lot of options that you have at that point. I wouldn't even rule out the possibility, depending on how you value a Jace Sternberger or how you value some of the running backs in this draft, whether it's David Montgomery or Daryl Henderson, of moving there. Although I think all three of those guys could possibly be available at 84 as well. I mean, I think it's possible you could sit there now and you could get Sean Bunting, Amari Hooker, and David Montgomery. And then when you couple that with the Frank Clark trade, you're feeling really good about what you did in those first three rounds of this draft.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to hear Todd Palmer's mock draft.
Well, no, that's, I mean, well, I kind of gave it to you. I
want to go name by name.
All right,
by name.
Wait, you first round? I thought we were just doing the Chiefs. We're just talking Chiefs right now.
Yeah,
like who the Chiefs are going to get in the seventh round.
Let's light this candle.
So I've got Sean Bunting falling to the Chiefs at 71. I know that might be a little bit of a
61?
Stretch. Or 61, sorry. I know that might be a little bit of a stretch. I think that there's a chance he goes much higher than that. And if he is gone, that's fine. I'll gladly take Amari Hooker, Juan Thornhill, or Deebo Samuel if any of those guys fall to 61. I would be willing to take a guy like Deebo Samuel at 61 if he's there without hesitation.
Next name. Next
at 63, name. I really like Imani Hooker there. Again, if Juan Thornhill is available, that's fine. If those two safeties are gone and you already got Sean Bunting at 61, or if you use that first pick on one of the safeties and a guy like, and let's say Deebo goes first half of the second round, because I think a lot of teams are going to value him. And Andy Isabella would be fine with me,
mm-hmm,
right there. You
yeah.
know how much I love Andy Neither. Isabella. I know that he's not a real big guy, but just the idea of what Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes could bring out of that guy at this level really makes me excited. I've got David Montgomery in round at number 84 with a third pick. I think Daryl Henderson may be an option there too. If Jace Sternberger lasts that long, I certainly would be happy to jump on him. Or this is maybe where if Kalen Saunders, the defensive tackle out of Western Illinois, makes it to 84, I think about grabbing him and watching him do some backflips as a like 320-pound freak of an athlete after you know his first career NFL sack. So any of those guys, I think, are good fits there. I actually, Dax Raymond, a tight end out of Utah State, if he's there, I think there might be good value there, because I think after that third round, you know, the Chiefs don't pick again until number 167, and I don't think you're going to get an impact tight end at 167. So, you know, if one of those guys, whether it's Sternberger or Dax Raymond, or maybe Kali Waring out of San Diego State, if one of those guys is there at 84, I think you have to consider them. But I would rather take David Montgomery or Daryl Henderson if they're there. And then further down, I think people forget, you know, you lose Jordan Devey, you lose Mitch Morse. If Alex Bars from Notre Dame slides into that fifth round, that number 167 area, I think he would be a good pickup. Or a Bo Benshaw out of Wisconsin. I've got him taking Alex Bars because I think there's a chance he might be there. At number 201, 214, 216, I think you have to stay true to your board there, whoever you like. But I've got guys like Paul Adams, the tackle out of Missouri, early there in the round. Hamp Cheevers, a developmental possibility, who drives on the ball well, has speed, has length, cornerback out of Boston College. And then with the last pick there at 216, I think they can get Hunter Renfro. Maybe you go 2-14 with him. I don't know. Shake it up in a hat. But Hunter Renfro out of Clemson, I think, gives them a pretty nice player in the slot that could be a fun weapon for the Chiefs and for Patrick Mahomes to play with. So that's who I got. Let's hear what you got.
All right. Some names I recognize in there.
I was surprised. Every time I kept doing some different simulations and stuff like that because I didn't want to go through and actually pick all 200 last night and try to figure out who I wanted. But Hunter Renfro, he was consistently there in those early, those early 200 picks. So
yeah, okay. Yeah. I'll go real quick on mine. 61st, I would have one Thornhill from Virginia. I think they need a safety with range, and if they got Amani Hooker, I had him in my previous one, I'd be ecstatic with either one of those two guys. Then I also think they're going to get corner. I think they're going to attack secondary in that second round, especially with the edge rusher off the board and handled. I had Jojon Williams on this one, but I would not be upset if they got Lonnie Johnson or if they got Amani or if they got Bunting. I wouldn't be upset with that either way. And then third
Jojon round, the Vanderbilt corner.
Yes.
Yes. Joe Juan, I believe, actually.
Okay.
Joe Juan Williams.
So, third round, since they moved up a little bit, I think they have somebody in mind that they're targeting in that higher third round. And I personally think that's Jay Sternberger out of Texas A&M. I think that's kind of one of the guys they're going after. I think there's also a good chance to get defensive line there, whether that may be Anthony Nelson from Iowa or maybe, like you said, your buddy Khalil Saunders from Western Illinois.
And he would be one of Terez's all juice players, which would keep the streak going.
Yes.
Of the Chiefs drafting
that's
an all
really
juice player.
What we need to do. fifth round, at this point, I think you're kind of getting some offensive depth for the most part. So I ended up putting Stanley Morgan Jr. from Nebraska, a really good possession receiver at that spot.
Yeah. And Antoine Wesley or Anthony Johnson out of Buffalo. I mean, there could be some wide receivers there if you haven't already addressed that need.
Yeah, and then also you could find some quality tight ends there, too. That's where I think Dax Raymond may end up going in. I think Foster Moreau, a good blocking tight end, could be there. You could also get some O-line depth. Sixth round, I got Alex Barnes from K-State. I think you're kind of trying to get a running back in the fifth or sixth round that athletically tests well, big size, can run out a shotgun. I think that's really what you're trying to go after in that range, unless you really are enamored with Montgomery from Iowa State.
Or if you miss on Sternberger and have to go running back there in that third pick.
And then final two picks, I got Jamal Davis, who I think could be a really good Sam linebacker from Akron that needs some development. Tested really, really well. Very athletic. Great size at 6'3", 240. And he's a solid pass rusher. So I think he could be a developmental guy that used on special teams now. Although, I really want to see Zigbo from Nebraska. I really want to see that name in the fifth or sixth round. And then seventh round, with the other seventh round pick, I put Troy Reader, who I think could be a Mike linebacker from Delaware, the home of Brett Veach, for people. And then
Fighting Blue Hens?
Yes. And then I had Alex Barnes on my last one from Notre Dame. He's coming off the ACL injury, but if that guy was healthy, he would not be available.
He'd be a third round pick, maybe.
He'd be
third
second,
or fourth round.
Second or third round pick because yeah. that guy is an old school blocker with plus athletic ability. So that's what I ended up having in my mock draft. So we will see how it works out. But I think there's a lot of opportunities for the Chiefs to get better in this upcoming draft.
I agree. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to come back and talk big picture look at first round. So stick with us here on 4th and 1.
We're here.
Welcome to 41 Action News Today.
When the sun dawns on a new day.
All right.
When one shift ends and another begins.
Some big changes are heading our way.
We're here for the ones who hit the ground running. The ones whose shifts never end. Because at 4:30 a.m., before the clouds and traffic roll in, we're here to prepare you as your day just begins. 41 Action News Today. Clear, complete coverage. 41 Action Sports with Mick Schaefer. Clear, complete coverage.
Cutting the cable cord? 41 Action News is now on Roku. Search KSHB. Add our channel and you're set. All of our newscasts stream live. No other station in Kansas City can say that. Get clear, complete coverage on 41 Action News now on Roku.
Welcome back to 4th and 1. Look, man, I know that Todd Palmer joined by Nick Jacobs. For those of you, if you just joined 25 minutes of the podcast.
Welcome to your first 4th and 1.
There you go. Hey, we're going to talk, first round here. I know the air, at least if you're a Chiefs fan, has kind of been sucked out of the room with the Frank Clark trade because
not for me.
The
I'm
Chiefs
still ready.
Don't have a first round pick. First of all, any chance, Nick, any chance at all that the Chiefs do something crazy and try to trade back into the first round?
I if I'm in their shoes, I wouldn't. I would stand pat to get what you need. But if there was somebody, and we won't know till draft night, but if there was somebody that dropped, that I would not be surprised one bit.
Who is there somebody who you think, man, if they ended up there at 31 and the Packers were looking to trade back, I would move heaven and earth to get that guy?
You already know that answer.
Well, they're going to take Marquise Brown.
Yeah, I was just saying that would be the cat that I would trade up for if I needed to. That's the guy, and then I'm
glad that I could read your mind. See, people think that we have this odd dynamic, but we're actually much more simpatico than people realize.
There's the thesaurus word right there. you've been sitting on that for a couple of weeks, just waiting for the right moment to ta-da.
I was kind of disappointed. You were in such a good mood Sunday when I dropped like one of my $5 words late in the podcast. You just let it slide.
I probably wasn't paying attention at that point.
He tuned me out.
Well, in all fairness, it was like 12:15 in the morning.
That's
so
true. You like dozed off in that moment.
I did not. I did not sleep, but I was ready to go to a quick trip.
All right, there you go.
And call it a night and watch some TV show.
All right. So how do you see this first round playing out? Because my mock draft, you can find it at kshb.com/Chiefs. Nick has some stuff there, too.
A couple things.
Yeah, one or two things. If you're looking for...
an 85-part series on the upcoming draft.
Yeah, if you're looking for anything on his 900-part series about the best fits for the Chiefs in the draft...
I like to call it Nick 900.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Go check it out. He put a lot of time and effort. I mean, really, for the last 2 months, guys, most of Nick's free time has been devoted to watching film and watching prospects and putting together something here.
And people still get upset that I didn't put Timmy Timmerson above some other guy at linebacker.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, Timmy Timmerson is a promising prospect.
Julian Love's mom is still, like, bitter. but, okay, so how do you see this first round shaking out? Are the Cardinals standing pat? Are they going quarterback 2 years in a row? Or do you see this draft going off the rails right away?
And honestly, what I'd heard through through reaching out to some people over the weekend is that, from what I heard, it sounded like the owner, Bidwell, didn't. He doesn't want, personally, financially, he really doesn't want back-to-back years of quarterbacks, which I completely understand from a financial perspective of signing bonus.
Well, and general manager Steve Keim kind of has a stake in this, too, because you basically be admitting that you made a mistake on trading up to number 10 for Josh Rosen last year.
In all honesty, my opinion, Steve Keim shouldn't be there right now. That shouldn't. I didn't understand why he was retained. I was like, you were part
especially
of that.
Especially when they sent Wilkes out, right?
Yeah, no, I thought after he should have gone with him, but I'm sure the owner didn't want to pay for two contracts two on buyouts. The way out the door. So I think that probably has something to do with that. But if I'm in the Cardinals' shoes, I would trade that pick. And
to the Raiders for number four and number 27.
Let the Raiders take Kyler Murray. You give me two first rounders this year, and a first rounder. Actually, give me all three first rounders this year. Let's make magic happen. And for the Raiders to send all their scouts away like that, they're brewing for something. And I think it's a quarterback, whether it's him or whether it's Murray or Drew Lock.
That's what I was going to say. I think if the Cardinals pass on Kyler Murray, I think it's because they swing a trade with Oakland, which is actually what I think is going to happen. If, however, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is able to convince them, no, I need this guy, and Josh Rosen will actually have more value after the draft for us because a team that missed on him will be willing to give up more in the 2020 draft than we can get for him now. You know, like let's say Washington misses out on all the quarterback prospects, or even or even the New York Giants, and maybe the Giants decide they're gonna give up a pick for him, or maybe that happens after the first round. Mm-hmm. Once the Kyler Murray dust is settled. But I think if I'm the Cardinals and I don't want Kyler Murray, I'm making that trade 100 times out of 100. Now, if Kingsbury is successful in convincing them that, hey, Kyler Murray's the guy I need to run this offense, he's ideal for it. We can win championships with Kyler Murray. I can't with Josh Rosen. And they're just not letting that out right now because they don't want to tank Rosen's value. Mm-hmm. Then I think I agree with you. I think that the Raiders may be looking at Drew Lock at number four. I really do. That seems like a Gruden type thing after spending time with him at the Senior Bowl and given some of the physical clay you have to mold with a Drew Lock. I would not be surprised by that.
I truly believe it for that the Raiders, they have their eye on one of the quarterbacks and they don't want somebody trading up above them. So, I mean, the tactical thing is here, you're either giving up multiple first rounders to move up to one, or the reason you took your scouts out of the room is because you are planning to take another quarterback, and you don't want that leaking out, and you don't want the Broncos or the Redskins.
You don't want somebody trading in,
sneaking up above you.
Because the Jets have been clear that, hey, we're willing to bail out of number three if you give us like another first round pick and a ham sandwich, and that's sitting right there ahead of the Raiders. So if the Raiders do covet Dwayne Haskins or Drew Lock and think, hey, that's our guy, and then we can recoup some of that value by trading Derek Carr off next off season. You don't want that leaking out, because you don't want, whether it's Cincinnati or Miami or Denver or one of those other teams that may also have a need there. Mm-hmm. The New York Giants at number six, if they love somebody, they certainly have the picks. They could move in front of you. You've got to be a little bit leery. And I don't think that you do that unless it's for a quarterback. I mean, I don't know what other position you do that for. So I agree. I personally have the Raiders swinging that deal, getting Kyler Murray. And then I think Bosa goes at number two to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Number three is where it starts to get interesting, because I think, the intrigue at number one is already interesting, but number three is another potential curveball. I don't think anybody else is moving up all the way to three to take a quarterback. So I think if you're the Jets, maybe you got to go best player available.
Yeah, I think it's – I'm personally expecting it to be Quentin Williams, because I think he has a similar strength that Ndamukong Suh had coming out. He didn't have the same athletic ability, but in terms of power, he's the same physical player that guy is. I know Ed Oliver's been connected to him as well, and I know some people have connected Josh Allen because he's similar to Anthony Barr in some regard. So I know those names have all been floating around in that regard. But, yeah, I'm very curious to see what the Raiders have up their sleeve. Because here's the reality for the Raiders. What they're having to do, regardless of what they do, they have to figure out a way to be able to compete offensively with the Chiefs and Chargers, or have a defense that can slow both those teams down. And ideally, you want to have both. But to get to that point right now, you need to be proficient in one spot or the other while you build up the other aspect of it. And the Broncos have the same task ahead of them. So right now, both of them need a quarterback to get that job done. And in Raiders' benefit, they have Derek Carr in front of that, so you don't have to rush that if you don't need to.
Well, and of course, the Broncos have Joe Flacco, so they bought some insurance. They bought some time for a year or two.
Both teams have quarterback insurance, but long-term, to compete with Mahomes for the next decade, you're going to need your own guy.
Well, and realistically, so do the Chargers. I mean, the only team that has a long-term solution in the AFC West at quarterback right now is the Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes, because Phillip Rivers is getting toward the end of his career. They're getting to the point where they may need to start looking at somebody, but they're way down at 28. So do you see any other teams? I mean, because every year, you hear people say, these quarterbacks are all terrible. Nobody likes any of the quarterbacks this time of year during lying season. But inevitably, teams start trading up to get to those quarterbacks. How many ultimately go in the top 10, do you think?
Top 10, I'm thinking two, and then I'm thinking there will be four in the first round. Because here's what I'm going to say about Haskins, and I haven't said this before. He's a lot like Alex Smith, in my opinion, to where he needs pieces around him to be successful. I don't personally think on his own that he can be a Patrick Mahomes who wills the team to victory and just uses all his abilities to get the job done. I think he's used to having to be a part of the offense, not the offense.
Well, and at Ohio State, he was that, and he was very good when he had those pieces around him.
Right, but the thing I notice is whenever he feels true pressure, whenever it's like an NFL-type rush coming at him, collapse in the pocket, that's when the inaccuracies I talked about started, and he would sail passes or he wouldn't be able to make a lot of the throws. So I don't think that's going to be fixed anytime soon. And so that's the risk. If I'm the Raiders, that's the risk I personally wouldn't want to take if I were in their shoes. But there's going to be some team that's willing to do that.
Well, and see, I think if you're worried that the Giants may be willing to take Haskins at number six, and you're the Cincinnati Bengals, look, there's a lot of overlap between the Ohio State and Cincinnati Bengals fan bases, and it's one of those things where if Haskins goes on to be a great quarterback, you don't want to have passed on him when you had the opportunity. Andy Dalton's been an okay quarterback for you for 8 years, but he's starting to have some durability issues. And how many playoff wins do you have for Andy Dalton's 8 years there?
Well, and then also you have a new
coach. None. You have none.
And also, you have a new head coach. Zach Taylor's wanting to build his own scheme. So.
And that's why I think that Cincinnati could be in line to try to trade into that number five spot with Tampa to take Haskins. And then I think also, I think there could be three quarterbacks that go in the top 10, because I think a team like Washington at 16, or at 15, sorry, could be looking at Denver at 10 and thinking, man, if Drew Locke slides out of those top six, because, you know, Jacksonville at 7's not taking him, Detroit at 8's not taking him, Buffalo at 9's not taking Drew Locke, but one of those teams may be willing to trade back, you know, so you can get in front of Denver if you're Washington and you really like Drew Locke. And look, he's been out there for visits. They obviously have a need. Case Keenum and Colt McCoy are not long-term solutions. Alex Smith's future is crazy uncertain right now. I think that number 9 with a trade up in front of Denver could be a landing spot for Drew Locke if he doesn't go earlier to the Raiders or something crazy.
Yeah, I'll be surprised if Locke gets out of the top 15.
So, and then the other quarterback, I think look, if I'm the New York Giants, I go ahead and address offense, defensive line with 6 and 17, and then I try to trade back in maybe to 29 if I want to get Daniel Jones, because you've got 12 draft picks. You can do some moving. So maybe Seattle is a team that just got that pick from the Chiefs but wants to collect more draft picks because they've only got 5 right now. Mm-hmm. They're willing to trade out if you'll throw in 37 and a couple others, and they can get in there and make sure that they get Daniel Jones before somebody else has that idea there at 29. I think you have to wait until you see whether Los Angeles pulls the trigger at 28 on something like that. But I think 29 might be the spot where somebody comes back in to get Daniel Jones, giving you 4 quarterbacks in that first round.
And they can't discount anything.
Solid analysis, sir.
I'm just being honest, man. Well, plus, we got to wrap this thing up.
Yeah, no. All right. Hey, so, guys, we hope you enjoyed the draft podcast. We will, I think, I want to put it out there in the universe too much for fear that it may not happen, but we may have a special guest for next week's podcast as we break down what actually.
Sunday, isn't it?
That's what I say. But we may have a special guest to break down what actually happened in the draft, so you don't have to listen to our speculation.
Yeah, I'll just go off the phone with a little bigger.
All right. You'll never guess who it is. You'll have to listen to next week's 4th and 1 if you want to find out. Take care, guys.